Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I wanted to give a quick intro to this podcast. We have, again, it's been a little bit of time since we've done one. The summertime and a second kid has been super fun, but also super busy making. So I'm working on some things for the fall, working on some things for the summer as well. But in the meantime, have a podcast coming up with David Klein. Hey, a lot going on with Cal Poly baseball. When I taped this podcast, I wasn't sure exactly what the status of Matt Imhoff was, and still, you know, kind of uncertain, up in the air. But thoughts out to the Imhoff family. Have a few posts probably coming up about Cal Poly baseball and what's been happening there on the site. And so go to it, check it out, check out my photos, photos.fansmanship.com. I've been having some fun with some new equipment lately. Check it out. And if you guys have any questions or ideas for topics or things, definitely hit me up, owen@fansmanship.com or on Twitter @fansmanship. Okay, let's get to the podcast with David Klein on fansmanship.com podcast. Let's go. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, and it is a special podcast. We have another fun guest in studio today. It's David Klein. Hey, David.
Hey, Owen. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can get as close to that mic as you feel like. So that you guys, I'm going to paint a picture of this soccer fanatic. He's got some Bayern Munich.
Bayern München.
München.
Yeah. If you want to say the correct German.
Now Bayern is a like a state in Germany.
Yeah.
I looked that up the other day.
Yeah, it's Bavaria.
Right,
yeah, that's right.
So theoretically, Bayern Munich, by calling themselves Bayern Munich, is saying we are the representative of all of Bavaria.
Well, considering they're the best team in Bavaria, I'd say that's a very, very...
I'm sure all the other teams feel that they're a little bit pompous about that. I'm sure there's some other Bavarian teams that like to think that they can compete.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, we got some Euro soccer knowledge in here with David. And, of course, David, you could hear on the Cal Poly baseball games giving updates, the Blast 825 taproom updates in the baseball games, and, you know, does some stuff for ESPN Radio in town. And I was over there the other day, and he was talking to me about soccer, and so I wanted to have him on, and especially with the Copa America that just happened, and get a few of his kind of thoughts on Copa, on Jurgen Klinsmann, on kind of where the U.S. stands right now. And you know, the U.S. has another kind of weird tournament where you can't really make a call one way or the other and make heads or tails out of it. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit more with him about that. This week was a really... just an interesting week if you're a Cal Poly baseball fan, and I wanted to kind of get to a few things that happened. First, I guess we can talk about the good things. Mike Miller, who was a shortstop in the Red Sox organization, former Cal Poly shortstop. You know, I realized I'm pretty sure there weren't any years in between Mike Miller graduating and Van Gansen coming in, or Mike Miller leaving and Van Gansen coming in, and so there were either 6 or 7 straight years where Larry Lee could probably just pencil in Mike Miller or Peter Van Gansen at shortstop before this past season. And I was looking at error numbers for Cal Poly, and this year's team had the most since like 2001 or 2002 or something like that. So that was interesting. And Mike Miller obviously is a good enough shortstop to play in the big leagues. So congratulations to Mike. Today also in Cal Poly baseball news, Bud Norris got traded to the Dodgers. So as a Dodger fan now, if you're a Cal Poly fan and a Dodger fan, there's two Cal Poly pitchers who are actually teammates on and both drafted in 2006. So 10 years since they were at Cal Poly, and now they both end up on the same team. Of course, Norris as a starting pitcher now, and Casey Fien's been awesome out of the bullpen for that team. So, you know, he didn't do so good on the Twins, didn't do so well on the Twins this season, has had a few blow-up innings, but is generally been really, really good in terms of his appearances. Has given, you know, an inning or two every time out, it seems like, and has done just a really great job. So, keep up the good work, Casey, and you know, we'll see that. You know, he'll be with his friend Bud. I think they're probably friends. I don't know. They played on the same college team, so they at least know each other, right? In other Cal Poly pitcher news, I don't even know how to describe it. Just the worst thing you could ever hear about a guy. Well, not the worst thing, but just about when it comes to Matt Imhoff. And if you haven't read this story, you know, it's kind of all over Deadspin, or you know, there's MLB.com stories about it. Matt Imhoff, of course, was the ace a few years ago with Cal Poly. He was a left. He's a left-handed pitcher, about 6'4", 6'5", tall guy, coming downhill playing. Was the ace on the team that hosted a regional. Was just an awesome pitcher. Was drafted in the second round by the Phillies organization and played for Clearwater the last like year and a half. Has battled injuries here and there, and was stretching with a rubber band apparently in a stadium, I think in Brevard County. And whatever rubber band stretching thing he was using ripped off the wall and hit him in the eye, his right eye, which is, you know, the closest eye to the plate if you're a left-handed pitcher. And they tried to do surgery on it. He posted an Instagram post today, and they tried to do surgery on it, and they made the decision to just go ahead and remove the eye and put a prosthetic eye in. And, you know, thoughts and prayers to his family. Certainly, as he said in his thing, he's not dead. So, you know, and certainly, you know, having one eye missing is not a life sentence by any means in terms of some things, but for playing baseball, you know, it can make it really, really tough without depth perception, et cetera. And, you know, for a guy who's worked so, so hard, and who, you know, so many people around San Luis Obispo have such good things to say. You never hear anybody say anything bad about Matt Imhoff, that's for sure, either when he was here or since he's been a professional. And I got a chance to interview him a couple of times, and super nice kid. And, you know, you just feel for a guy who's probably like 23, 24, was kind of trying to work his way up in an organization where there might have been some opportunities in the Phillies organization. You know, you show what you can do, and maybe you have some opportunities. So, you know, a really tough break for a good kid and a guy that, you know, that everybody's going to be rooting for from here on out, that's for sure. And I know I am. David, I don't know if you were around when Imhoff was around, but he was a dominant dude.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I actually wasn't, because I transferred in Pauly.
That's right.
In 2014.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've heard stories. I've researched him, because when I'm interning with CJ, right, I do her Mustangs in the major. So I remember seeing Matt's name on the sheet a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And it's just a very, very incredibly unfortunate situation, and yeah, you know, the best wishes out to him and his family.
I just can't even imagine being, you know, in a road city too. You know, he's living in Clearwater, but he's down in Miami because that's where he was playing, and it's just like, you know, it's a really bad thing. So, you know, best wishes to Matt, best wishes to his family, you know, a healthy recovery from the surgery and the operation that he had to have. And, you know, I'll definitely be looking out for him if he's around San Luis Obispo. And so best wishes out there, Matt. Okay. Let's transition now, you know, from, or to, I guess, some soccer, cause that's why I have you in here, David. Let's talk some soccer. So the U.S. in the Copa America, lost to Colombia. Let's kind of take it game by game. In a game that Jurgen Klinsmann argued they had the run of play, and I don't know if they did or not, because I was there,
yeah,
and I couldn't really see it from that angle.
I was also there, and I didn't think the U.S. played all that well in that game. I mean, they were able to.
There are people who argue that they were right there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, I personally, I didn't see it. To be honest, I think Colombia could have easily made it 3-4-0 easy. I didn't think there was really much the U.S. were doing right until Pulisic came on.
And no chances that they were creating. Like, it was a bad game, and I was like, oh my gosh, the U.S. is going to go like 3 and out, and this is it for Klinsmann. Like, that was my thought after that game. There was no chance that they were going to do anything well. Fast forward to a week later when they played Costa Rica, right, at Soldier Field,
yeah,
and or not a week later, but like 4 or 5 days later, And they came out and just blitzed the Costa Ricans, like they were, you know, the greatest whatever in the world. It was really wild to see.
It was strange because Costa Rica isn't a bad team. Now, keep in mind, a few years ago in the World Cup, you know, they made it to the quarterfinals, I think, of the World Cup. Now, this is a team that has Brian Ruiz, that plays for Sporting in Portugal. Mm-hmm. And they also have Joel Campbell, who plays for Arsenal. This is still
Sporting Lisbon.
So, yeah, Sporting Lisbon. Thank you. And so this is a really good Costa Rican team. And I was not expecting, A, the performance that USA put up, but B, the performance that Costa Rica put up.
Yeah. And they looked kind of out of sorts. And once the USA got a goal or two, it was just, you know, it was on, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, how many goals did they score in that game?
I think it was 4-0.
4-0.
Yeah.
I mean, just wild, right?
Go figure, from the Colombia game to that.
Where there were no opportunities and zero finishing to that game where, you know, you could call finishing lucky finishing sometimes with the U.S. because their play is gritty and whatever, but they got the ball in the net a number of times and did what they had to do to do it. So
definitely.
So that was like, oh, man, what okay, guys, all right. Good bounce back. They played their third game on the East Coast against
Paraguay. Yeah.
And
they won that one 1-0.
They won that one 1-0 as well against the Paraguay team that you know, wasn't super highly touted coming in. And so they get like a high seed coming. They win their group because they scored 4 goals against Costa Rica.
Well, it wasn't even because of that. It was because Colombia lost to Costa Rica on the last match day. So that allowed the U.S. to go up top based on goal differential.
Because they were tied in points, and so goal differential, they had scored 4 against against Costa Rica.
Right.
And Colombia lost to Costa Rica. So that was a huge deal. They got the number one seed or whatever coming out of there. And then they go in and they win their next game too, right?
Mm-hmm. Against Ecuador, 2-1.
Right. And that Ecuador game was like pretty tight and pretty well played. I want to hear your take on that. Because now you're kind of getting into games that really are high intensity. I mean, not that the early ones aren't, but now it's like, you know, do or die.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that game was... It was interesting, too, because I think they played a friendly against Ecuador a few weeks before the Copa America started. And, you know, you kind of had a feeling when the match started that Klinsmann was really trying to get that first goal and just really kind of give it to Ecuador like they did in that friendly, that which they also won. And, I mean, the ball movement was there. Dempsey was controlling the team like I thought he should have been doing throughout the whole tournament.
Yeah.
And so when I see that kind of performance, you know, it's good because, I mean, I don't know about you and me, I didn't expect them to get this far, at least after the Colombia game.
Yeah, so like, okay, yeah, let's keep going. So I didn't either. After the Colombia game, I didn't expect them to win any games. Mm-hmm. I was like, they're going to go 3 and out in this. Now they're winning a knockout game. They're in the Final Four. Boom, one win, and there they are. So Final Four, back to the drawing board against
Argentina. And I mean, any American soccer fan who can think straight knows that, you know, it's obviously going to be a very, very slim chance for the USA to come out against that kind of team, you know, with Messi, Higuain, Di Maria, you know, the whole team.
Those guys didn't even start though in that game.
Yeah, I don't think Di Maria started, but I know Higuain started and I know Messi started. Right. And the midfield that they have too. I mean, that whole Argentina team is ridiculous, but. I mean, let me just give a second to acknowledge that Messi's free kick in that match was probably top two of the greatest free kicks I've ever seen in my life. Now, let alone I'm only 20 years old. I still have a lot of soccer to watch in the rest of my life. Knock on wood.
Gotta watch some Roberto Carlos
highlights. Yeah, exactly. I was not old enough to remember the Roberto Carlos, you know, left-handed outside the boot shots that just curled in. But, you know... I mean, there's building blocks because the USA, there are things to take away from that game.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good stepping stone, especially, you know, as, you know, the next generation of talent comes in when you get to Russia in a couple of years.
So these are like, I have two questions and I'm going to say them both now so we don't forget them. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to know is who is that next talent? Because I don't see it, that talent. I mean, Pulisic was there. He was ready to play, and he got very little run towards the end. Like, I think you know, if you're going to have some criticism for Klinsmann, it's like, okay, there's players who are talented who you have here. There's a guy who's 17. If you're not going to play him, like, that's really frustrating, especially with guys with red cards and everything else. Mm-hmm. So who are those next guys? Who is that next generation? Is that next generation any better than this generation? Or, you know, what can we expect out of that? Because the U.S. soccer, you know, has kind of gradually built to a point where every generation is a little better, right? I think, you know, in terms of skill and everything else and with relation to the world stage. So, like, you know, you could say that John Brooks versus, you know, the world and even the backline that they have now is probably better and more highly touted, you know, worldwide or on par with worldwide players than, you know, a mid-90s team, even with Lawless, who I know played in Italy. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, you have, you know, I think overall the talent level is higher than it's ever been relative to the rest of the world. Is that at some point going to plateau, right? And who are these guys coming in? So that's my first question. And then my second question is, you know, what does it mean, like, for the U.S. when we're talking about losing to Argentina? Yeah, we lost to Argentina, but, you know, I want to talk about, like, the way that they lost too, and the fact that that they didn't. They didn't kind of go into a defensive shell. That's not what Klinsmann wants to do. If you listen to Steve Sampson's podcast with Alexi Lawless that he did on Lawless's podcast. Did you hear that?
I did not.
It's really interesting. It's from like a month ago.
Really?
Okay, yeah, a couple months ago. And Sampson went on there and they talked a lot about, like, the John Harkes thing, and they talked, like, about everything from that France World Cup that was just a complete disaster and what happened. And Sampson basically said, I wanted to play up, 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 but, you know, but we couldn't do that because X, Y, and Z, you know, and the U.S. never really has kind of played not non-conservative soccer, mm-hmm. you know, in big stages against good teams. You know, they've very rarely kind of come out that way. And maybe that's what they tried to do against Argentina, and maybe that's what got them, you know, nipped quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Messi free kick, there's nothing you can do about. But those are kind of two questions or two kind of topics I want to hit. And then, you know, to your point about Messi, he's the only player on a team that I'm rooting against during the game. He gets the ball and I'm giggling. I'm like Beavis and Butthead on the back end. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, it's very funny.
Yeah.
And I can't help it. When he made that free kick, I laughed, and it was basically the game sealer against the U.S. and I chuckled. I was like, "Wow!" Like, yeah. You just have to kind of recognize greatness. Okay,
yeah.
Let's go back to my first question. It is about kind of who is next. What does that actually look like for the U.S.? They're U-20. They're, you know, like, how much do you know about that? And what does that actually look like?
Well, the thing is, I think when you analyze a situation like that, I think you have to first realize, okay, who's going to be the guys that are, you know, getting towards the tail end of their careers? Who are going to be the guys that are, you know, who are going
to
be done
in the next 2 to 4 years?
Exactly, before right. the 2018 World Cup in Russia. And I'm gonna actually throw something out there. I was not impressed with Michael Bradley in this Copa America.
No.
I thought he was very, very average. He did not really control the match like he used to.
And it's hard to tell because so this is my one interesting thing is that when we play, when the U.S. plays non-conservative, when they play without a defensive, like, you know, I mean, Bradley's like the perfect central midfielder mm-hmm. in a, you know, very defensive formation.
Yeah, he's a deep-lying playmaker.
Right. But when you start to try to, you know, move things forward and have a pair of wings and, you know, kind of three attacking players at once,
right.
You know, Bradley kind of starts to lose some of his luster when he gets so much pressure mm-hmm. from two defenders in the midfield instead of just one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And so, I mean, I think, I honestly don't know if he's going to make the World Cup in 2018. I think
Landon Donovan didn't last time, right? Why would Bradley this time?
Exactly.
Nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the issue I really have with Klinsmann is because he's so rooted to his standards. I mean, that's why Tim Howard didn't really play that much in this tournament.
Deep test. He wasn't in shape, probably.
He wasn't in shape, but still, he's
a goalkeeper.
He's a better goalkeeper than Brad Guzan. Brad Guzan, right. I've read a stat saying that Brad Guzan and Tim Howard, based on those two, are Guzan played with, Aston Villa and Tim Howard with Everton. Guzan didn't have a single clean sheet after January 4th with Aston Villa, and they got relegated. And Tim Howard, I think, held, 6 out of 10 clean sheets after he got demoted to goalkeeper number 2 behind Joel Robles. Right. But I still think Tim Howard's a better goalkeeper.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, looking out to 2018, are those guys going to be there? Maybe
neither of them.
Yeah, maybe neither of them, because Tim Howard, I think, is going to be, 40 by that time?
Hey, I got a good idea. Hey, our guy from Cal Poly got a start last night in the MLS. That was the other one I was going to say. Wade Hamilton got a start for the Timbers.
Wade Hamilton got that start last night. He actually played really well because I'm a Galaxy fan. I'm from Orange County, so I wanted to watch that game. And I was looking at the team sheet to see who was playing.
The goal he gave up wasn't cheap, right?
No. It was a really good shot by Jose Villarreal. He just went off his left boot and just went, curled into the bottom corner, not Wade's
fault.
Maybe
like in 5 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Maybe not Russia. Maybe Qatar or whenever.
Yeah. Qatar 2026. Hopefully in the U.S. You know, we'll see. But okay. So now looking towards the younger generation of talent, you have Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood had a fantastic Copa
America.
He's
low 20s. He's
like 22. 20, 21, 22. He just sealed himself a move to Hamburg in the Bundesliga from Union Berlin. So I think,
and he is a German-born American.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Correct.
As are a lot of these guys.
Yes.
Yeah. So who else is going? Like, so you have maybe a keeper change. Mm-hmm. Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley, some of these guys who've been around for a while now. I'm trying to think of others who are Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, Dempsey. Like, Dempsey will be a big question mark.
On the chopping block? So who's out there? Like, who could overtake them?
Okay, so there's a few names. I think Pulisic, by the time that 2018 comes on, I think he will play a big factor in this team.
He better start.
I think he will start because I think when you look at that front line, you have Bobby Wood, Jossie Zard is who I think had a really underrated Copa America.
Like 24, 25-ish,
right. Yeah. So he brings a lot of pace to that wing that I think the U.S. could desperately use.
You know where he played soccer in college?
Was it San Bernardino?
Or Baco?
Oh, Baco's. Yeah, Baco's field. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And I think there's a bunch of other youth attacking talent. Bradford Jameson, a guy that plays right now for the LA Galaxy 2. He got called up a few times. He's about 19 years old right now.
Okay.
I think he can be a factor.
You say he got called up to LA Galaxy 1?
Yeah, the senior team a few times because they have guys.
U.S.
Like
Open Cup games
and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I think when you look at the rest of the midfield, obviously you have, you know, you're going to lose a lot. Jermaine Jones, I think, is not going to be able to play by Russia. Michael Bradley, that's the thing.
Who knows exactly?
Okay. Hinman, a guy who used to play for Fulham, a youth American. He plays now for, I think he just signed for Bournemouth, for a Premier League side. I don't think he has any.
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth, uh-huh. FC Bournemouth.
And they got promoted this last year.
They got promoted last year, but they were able to secure, you know, just
they stayed.
Yeah, they stayed. They stayed up.
All right.
And so I think, I don't know how much he's going to play with them. I don't know. I actually don't remember if he has actually any U.S. caps.
Okay.
But I think he can play an interesting factor. Yeah. And when you look at the defense, I think, you know, when you look at that center back partnership of Jeff Cameron, John Brooks. John Brooks plays for Hertha Berlin in the Bundesliga. Jeff Cameron plays for Stoke City. Both those guys play against, you know, world-class attackers. You know, Jeff Cameron, he plays against the likes of Sergio Aguero. He plays the likes of Daniel Sturridge, of other, like, world-class attacking talent. He knows how to deal with that. On the other side, you have John Brooks, who plays against Lewandowski, who plays against Marco Reus, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
So you're feeling pretty decent about those guys, like about the defense generally.
Yeah, and then Yedlin, too, on the right-hand side. I still think he has a lot of maturing to do.
Is Fabian going to be like the old, mature left back?
Yeah,
and the ironic part is Beasley tried to be.
Yeah, and the funny thing, too, is that for Fabian, he plays in Mönchengladbach. He plays as a left mid. He plays a lot more attacking football in Germany than he does for the U.S. team.
Right.
And so I think, you know, as that transition comes, I think it's just going to be, you know, the natural, you know, mother time progression as, you know, Jermaine Jones becomes too old to play the sport. Michael Bradley becomes too old to, you know, run a full pitch nowadays. Clint Dempsey is going to be, you know, I can't predict, but I think he's going to be, you know, borderline being able to start games nowadays.
Right.
I think maybe I compare Clint Dempsey's 2018 World Cup to maybe what Landon Donovan's 2010 World Cup was, almost as like a kind of like the last little hurrah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
so that's the way I see it. And then as goalkeeper, you know, you might have to be forced to play Guzan because the only other keeper who I think would be able to play up with the national team would be Bill Hamid from DC United. So I think those would be...
What happened to all the keepers in the U.S.? Like, it used to be a thing, right?
It did used to be a thing. And I think it's just, you know... I mean, who knows? Maybe Wade will get called up.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. I have a few names for you because I'm actually I wrote like 2 years ago, I wrote for FC Dallas blog, like the SB Nation one. It's called Big D Soccer. Anyway, so I followed FC Dallas a lot, and this guy was trying to make some comment that there wasn't much between the U.S. and Colombia, like overall, like, oh, but if you watch these actual games, it wasn't that much of a, it was like 4-0, but yeah. You know, the results in two games, I know it's a small sample size. I think I tweeted at him like, if they played 10 times, Colombia wins 6 or 7 and they draw 1 or 2 probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Or 2 or 3 maybe. Yeah. And that means the U.S. wins like 1 or 2 out of the 10.
Because I forgot to mention too that USA played Colombia in the third place game and they lost 1-0.
And they lost again. Yeah. Right. That's what I was saying. Yeah. So four, you know, it was like what, 3-0 in the two games and it could have been way more.
Definitely.
And my point was like, there's this guy at FC Dallas named Fabian Castillo who is like, who would start on the U.S. team in half a second. If you watch him play, he's better than Wood probably.
Really?
In terms of being, you know, playing on the kind of a channel guy wing. Anyway, he's really fun to watch. But he's Colombian. Kellen Acosta, who's a FC Dallas guy, is somebody who I think is super interesting moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see get, you know, some run, at least some opportunities. Uh-huh. He's a really young guy. He played on the U-20 World Cup team in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, if you're talking about, you know, defenders and this guy's coming off an injury, you know, recently too, Matt Hedges, is a defender who plays for FC Dallas, who's been their captain for a while. He's tall, he's big, you know, and I know he plays in MLS, and I know Klinsmann isn't a huge fan of guys who play in MLS in general, but those are two guys who play for Dallas who I'm always kind of interested in teams, you know. I used to feel the same way about Omar Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And that's another name. He's not that old yet.
No, he isn't. I think his move to Pachuca, I think kind of, I don't know, maybe it
reinvigorated
him. Yeah, I think it maybe kind of struck a chord with Clemson. But I think also another name too, Matt Miazga. Okay. Just moved from Red Bulls to Chelsea. He didn't get that much playing time at Chelsea, but he's doing what Klinsmann wants. He wants to be put in a more challenging
another defender.
Exactly. Right. Another big, tall defender. You think he's like 6'4". Right. And then, I'm sorry, one more name I forgot in the midfield. Yeah. Darlington Nagbe. I think in the 2018 World Cup, I think Nagbe will play a very, very, very prominent role because he reminds me of, I don't know, a N'Golo Kante-esque player, like a guy who very high work rates, very, very good at getting on the ball and keeping possession and distributing at the same time. So I think Nagbe, even though he didn't play that much in the Copa America, I thought he should have, I think in the coming friendlies and, you know, leading up to 2018 in Russia, I think he would play a very, very prominent role.
And there's other names like Paul Areola, you know, other guys who've played on, you know, under 20, three national teams. Jordan Morris is on, you know, is a guy who we've heard of, you know, Will Trapp, who's a midfielder as well. But none of those guys really strike me as guys who, and then again, another FC Dallas defender, Walker Zimmerman. So, you know, who's a big, tall guy again. You know, I think there are some MLS guys, at least on defense, who could be that. But I just don't see, and this is a good maybe transition for the Klinsmann conversation. I see what Klinsmann's trying to do, and I really have been a Klinsmann supporter. Okay, just let's get that out there right now. I've been a big supporter in terms of his, how do I put it? I've been a supporter in terms of his ability to say, I think, the right things, even if they're the awkward things. I think he's said things that I like to hear as a fan. Things about, you know, we can't be afraid. This is exactly who we want to play. We're not afraid of Argentina. You know, we're not going to like, and he says it publicly, and he's somewhat transparent about it. It seems like, at least in, you know, in public, in terms of like, we can't be too worried. We can't be filled with, you know, angst. And I think too often in the United States, when we overanalyze things, we are filled with angst. The problem is, I don't know if he has the horses to run that race, right? With teams, with teams internationally, and to that end, you know, if he's also the youth director, or the, you know, what do you call it, like the development?
Yeah, the development director, I think.
Right, development director.
Yeah.
Then that's maybe a bit, you know, I don't want to say a bigger failure, because development is like, you know, baseball development. It takes, you know, a decade before you actually see somebody's impact.
Yeah.
But I just don't see youth players in the United States being developed in an appropriate way. And so, you know, going back to Klinsmann, you know, I like his talk. I like, you know, a lot of what he says, but I don't see Pulisic getting in the game, you know, in towards the end. Like, they had options to put him in the game in a few of those games and chose other, you know, chose other things. They didn't, you know, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Klinsmann, and I don't know what to make of the U.S.'s, you know, result in this tournament and what it means for them in the future.
Well, okay, so let me start off saying I'm not a fan of Klinsmann.
Yeah.
But with everything he's done in his tenure as a U.S. national team coach, you know, you get to the round of 16 and you beat out the group of death. And that group of death, I wasn't even expecting to get a single point, because you had Ghana, you had Portugal, you had Germany. You had Cristiano Ronaldo, you had the whole German team that ended up being the world champions, and you would have gone a team that U.S. has always had problems with in previous World Cups. Now, you're not going to fire him after that. Obviously, leaving out Landon Donovan was a huge...
People were mad.
People were pissed. Very mad, yeah. Including myself.
Uh-huh. Galaxy fan that you are.
I can't help it. Okay. But, you know, even with the Gold Cup of a few years ago, finishing fourth, you know, that was a big no-no. Losing to Mexico for that Confederation Cup spot was a big no-no.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, as many people did, if they didn't get out of this group, he was going to get canned. I knew that for a fact. But they get to the semifinals.
Right.
You cannot even think about firing Klinsmann at this point. You can't. Just because he made it this far when he exceeded all of our expectations.
Yeah. Well, and the team did, and they found a way, you know, even though they looked... And that's the crazy thing about the U.S. is they look so scrappy sometimes, and they look so, you know, like they're going to figure it out, and they always kind of have a chance because they hustle, but, you know, and that's like a funny thing to say about a professional, you know, professional dudes, but... Mm-hmm. It's kind of the American way is to not be very skilled at soccer, but to hustle and be tough and kind of find a way one way or another, you know, to get a good ball here and there and see what they can do, which it didn't work in game one against Colombia when everybody was all on equal footing and everybody had chance to plan what we're going to do that first game. Didn't work. But once we got into, you know, multiple games in a week and stuff like that, it kind of came through. And to that end, I like the kind of mental toughness game that Klinsmann plays, and that's something I don't mind him even challenging players. Like, if you're a professional player, you should be able to take criticism or challenge, or, you know, I'm like a Phil Jackson fan too, you know, I think Klinsmann has a little bit of like mind game Phil Jackson-ness in
just
him.
Just without the rings.
But when he had good play, you know, he did that, you know, he developed guys in Germany and developed their, you know, games. I think if Klinsmann was given the reins at like a top Premier League, you know, team or something like that, or if he was given the reins on a team that had a lot more talent than the U.S. has, this is the most talent they've ever had, but it doesn't mean that they're on par with the rest of the country or the rest of the world, excuse me.
Yeah, of course.
Right? I mean, and I just wonder how they're going to do that. I mean, Klinsmann's found band-aids in Europe in terms of the Germans that he's brought over. I mean, let's be honest, like Jermaine Jones, you know, if you heard these guys talk, like they're raised in Germany. Fabian Johnson.
John Anthony Brooks.
Yeah, Brooks.
Yeah, all those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my biggest thing with Klinsmann is his consistency in decision making.
It's not there.
It really isn't.
And it's not transparent in terms of like who plays. That's the part that's weird.
Yeah. And I mean, even that last game against Argentina, the U.S. just basically took the attack from Argentina. And I don't think that was the right idea. I think some of the U.S. players after the game mentioned that they gave too much respect to Argentina. They saw the likes. They were almost playing timid.
But Klinsmann was like, we're not afraid. We're not afraid. We're not going to play afraid. Was that on him?
Yeah, that was on him, because what you could say is you could just have everyone press up. You can pressure the ball instead of just sitting back and letting the barrage of attacks come from Argentina. Yeah. You can press up on the ball, make Argentina make a mistake, and then counter off of that and have more chances at goal, which they did not.
Do you think that is part of what he's trying to implore them to do in the 20th minute, and they're just like gassed at that point from and they just can't?
And that's the thing, is how much can a soccer coach
really make a huge difference in the middle of a half like that or something like that?
Well, I don't think it's It's not Klinsmann as much as it's a team selection, because Jermaine Jones is not a guy that could press for 90 minutes in a match.
Correct.
Neither is Michael Bradley, and probably not even Clint Dempsey at this point. They don't have the legs to do that. Otherwise, they'd get gassed by halftime. So I think he just needs to find an identity. What he wants to do. If he wants to play counterattacking football, if he wants to play high pressure and just force the opposing team and make a mistake, then you got to play younger guys who have those legs that can go that distance for that long amount of time.
Right.
You know, and I think
you got to be willing to make subs when things are happening,
exactly,
and like on the fly. And exactly. I feel like he does roll with whoever he starts for a little bit too long, and he's a little bit too stubborn in what his initial game plan is when the what's happening in the game dictates differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I mean, I think that's something that you're going to really look forward to in the next couple of friendlies that the USA have against other teams is, you know, who does he decide to bring up? Does he decide to bring back a Julian Green from Bayern Munich, who beat out Landon Donovan for that last World Cup spot in 2014?
And where is he?
He's playing for the Bayern Munich
reserve
team.
But, like, is he because he's on the reserve team? Because his form hasn't been great?
Yes.
That's
exactly it. I mean, I remember all the hype for Julian Green after the 2014
Bayern Munich
World Cup.
Right? Yeah. So, like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the reserve team isn't really exemplary. They play in the third tier and they are not doing too well in it. But the hype for Julian Green after that 2014 World Cup was, oh yeah, he's going to get a loan from Tottenham. He's looking maybe go to Chelsea. You know, all this hype.
Right.
You know, he goes to
he looked good in one of the. He scored a goal, right?
He scored the only goal against Belgium in that round of 16 game.
Great goal.
Yeah, and then so he gets loaned out to another Bundesliga club the following season. Doesn't really do anything.
Right.
And then he comes back this year, gets demoted down to the reserves, and I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if Klinsmann decides to give him another chance, because right now he's playing for the U23s, and you know, in the coming years you want to see those wingers, because I mean, when you think about real wingers for this US team, you have Jossie Zardes. Bobby Wood's playing more of a left wing, even though I don't really see him as a left winger. I see him more as a striker.
Uh-huh.
You have Julian Green, obviously, is another option. You have, you know, Pulisic, who can play as a winger too.
Right.
And so if you want to play more of this pressure, you know, attacking football, you need those young guys who have those legs to be able to run that long and pressure the ball that long.
Yeah, I guess I thought that I would come out of this tournament with a more definitive thought about Klinsmann and the way this team is going.
I think there's definitely more questions than answers.
There's more questions afterwards because they made it to the semifinal and they looked weird doing it.
Yeah.
And there was still no clear whatever. And maybe that's how Klinsmann rolls. And honestly, I'm not a professional soccer coach, so I don't know. But maybe keeping people on their toes and on edge is a healthy environment. I know that a lot of the players don't think so, right? I mean, that's a lot of what players don't like about playing for Klinsmann is that nothing's guaranteed, you know, there's no security, there's no safety in anything.
Right.
That's what he tries to promote is hey, you got to be on edge, you got to be ready for anything that's coming. And that kind of crisis mentality is one that's, you know, that obviously got him the semifinals. So it's like, you know, what the hell?
It's paid off for him before. And you've seen that in the teams he's coached. He used to coach Germany, he even used to coach Bayern Munich.
Right.
And, you know, he's always had that kind of, I won't say swagger about him, but he's always been kind of tied to his roots that's got him to this point. And, you know, he's going to live by it. He's going to die by it eventually.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, and then I was asking, and it's a moot point now, but who is that next U.S. coach too? Because I saw a lot of things before the tournament and after that Colombia game, you know, would the U.S. I think there's been some sentiment man, he's really poached Germany really hard and held those players up higher. You know, how can we you know, figure out how to get the most out of local guys too? I know there's an MLS, MLS and U.S. Soccer Federation are certainly, you know, closely linked.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make that happen? There's lots of fun soccer ifs, ands, or buts that we could, you know, continue to talk through.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we don't have a ton of time. Tell me about what you're up to these days. You're just graduated, right, from Poly. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I just graduated with my Bachelor of Science, interestingly enough. I didn't know that was a thing, especially in journalism. Yeah, in broadcast journalism. So
what's scientific about it?
I think it's mainly just the amount of GEs you take for graduation fulfillment. You have to take a lot of science classes. I took a aerospace class to count for general ed.
Okay.
So I think that has something to do with it. Right now I am working at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah.
Doing my thing
Come down
there.
To Slowtown.
Yeah,
see
exactly. Because my lease in my apartment runs through August, so I might as well just figure, you know, might as well live here if I'm continuing.
Are you still doing stuff at ESPN?
I am. I'm still producing for CJ Silas, the CJ Silas show.
Yeah.
I was in talks to have a my own soccer show on the station.
Okay.
But that's looking like it's going to fall through. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do something similar to what you're doing with Fansmanship and this podcast video thing called Blab. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a very interesting. It's like video seminars, video web content stuff. So I'm thinking I'm going to look into that.
Cool.
And then for the future after that, you know, I think I have some opportunities either here in Cal Poly or back home in Orange County, possibly in LA too.
Cool,
so,
man.
We'll see. Doors are always open.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a Twitter account?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at DKLINE44. It's DKLINE44. I like to react to big soccer matches and other sports news as they happened, as you can tell by some of my all caps tweets. So it's always an entertaining time at the DKLINE44 Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Home. I know you're a big European soccer guy. How much are you following MLS, the Cal Poly guys that are kind of in and around the league these days? I know there's a keeper out in Chicago.
Yeah.
There's you know, there's Kip who got some early run.
Yeah, Kip's killing it with New Zealand. They got their own Confederation Cups spot. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing him, Wade now getting into it.
Yeah.
You know, Chase and Matt LaGrossa with Sacramento Republic FC are they're doing well over there too.
Yeah, and LaGrossa just got loaned out to Tulsa.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he's headed to Tulsa and
Definitely.
And I've been trying to figure out, you know, how Chase is gonna get more runs somewhere. I don't know what's going on in Sacramento, but I really want to see him.
I thought Chase's whole situation was very strange after being drafted in the first round.
First
round by Columbus Crew, you know, and then not even getting signed to a contract. I thought that was a very, very odd situation.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm kind of curious. If I ever run into him, I want to ask him how that all went down.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, because in terms of ball skills, you know, I mean, Kip was a good player, but like in terms of just pure soccer talent.
Yeah, Chase was the best.
Like he was, yeah. I mean, just being able to move the ball around and whatever. I mean, in terms of in all the games that I saw on the field, I mean, there were very few soccer guys that could, you know, beat somebody one on one.
Exactly. Chase could do that. Maybe Justin at some times.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of consistency and making the right pass and everything else, the only thing I can think of is he's not real big.
Yeah.
And when you get to the professional ranks, maybe they want to give him a year to bulk up or something.
Maybe.
But it's weird to me that he has gotten like hardly any run even in Sacramento. There are a lot of Big West guys in Sacramento. There's Barrera from UCSB and Iwasa from Irvine. And we've seen Mac Pridham, who got a goal the other night for Sac Republic. And like you said, Colby's gotten loaned there one time too.
Yeah.
So he's played for them. Sac's not going to be San Jose's affiliate. It's going to be Reno moving forward after this year. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting.
Very cool.
Little USL tidbit. I think Sac's trying to make a push for MLS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. They don't want to be I think they probably want to be like on their own if that's where they're headed. But so anything else soccer coming up? I know the Euros still going on, right?
Euros, a very entertaining match going on happened today with Portugal and Poland. They drew 1-1.
I saw some Ronaldo memes or Ronaldo
Ronaldo had some chances in that game that he didn't put.
I mean, his reactions.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's typical Ronaldo. And same thing that happened with Messi when he missed his penalty in the Copa America final. But, it's really good times. You know, I'm really looking forward to those Iceland. Have you heard that Icelandic commentator? Uh-huh. When we're done here, look him up because he is the most entertaining commentator. I don't understand any Icelandic
anything he's saying,
but he's literally screeching. His voice is screeching because of the excitement that the Icelandic team is bringing. And
who's left? I mean, is it what round are we in? I haven't been paying any attention
to you. Right now we're in the quarterfinals. Portugal just booked their place to the semis. Tomorrow is Wales, Belgium. Saturday is Germany, Italy. And Sunday is France, Iceland.
No, it's not the quarterfinals yet then.
Yeah, it's quarterfinals.
Okay,
those are the last eight, and I'm really pulling for all those guys, last names that end in Sun from Iceland, you know, all those guys. They're an entertaining team to watch.
Is that Ida Gudjonsson?
Yeah,
Old Icelandic name?
Exactly.
Was he an Iceland guy? Or was he like Norway or Sweden?
No,
or
I think he's Iceland, yeah.
Okay.
I think he's Icelandic,
okay. Yeah.
So I mean, it's all really good times. And then also you have the Olympics starting up in a couple weeks. You have the International Champions Cup.
Are the Olympics starting up in a couple weeks?
They're starting in like August 5th. Yeah, a couple weeks.
And the U.S. trials are like now.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon Day Monroe, yeah. Stephanie Brown, Drafton. Those are people who we want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely.
From Cal Poly, among others. There's a couple other swimmers and stuff that are going to be in there, too.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's all good times in the world of sports, especially in soccer. There's always transfer rumors heading up. Ibrahimovic just signed for United today, so... That's going to be...
Manchester?
Yeah, Manchester United. Yeah.
Got him.
Yeah, so that's going to be... I think Manchester United, especially back with Jose Mourinho, I think it's going to be a really, really scary squad. You have the International Champions Cup coming up a couple weeks. I think it'll be really cool to go down and see Liverpool and Leicester City down at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, you're going
to
go down?
I'm going to definitely try. I'm going to try and get a media pass and go down and cover that one too. So cool. We'll see. It's all good times.
Right on, David Klein. I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to follow David, it's dklein44.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always follow me at Fansmanship. At Owen Main is also a Twitter handle I use from time to time. And we're going to try to ramp up podcasts a little bit more here moving forward. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up. Signs out on